And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
And you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is Challenging Established Beliefs. All of my guests are discussing topics that may challenge you to think differently. My next guest knows what it takes to succeed more than once in the crowded book publishing market. He's a 9-time best-selling author of both fiction and nonfiction books. We'll discuss the evolution of books and the book publishing from his latest book titled Gutenberg to Google. And if you want to join in the conversation or talk to Michael Levin, you can call us at 639-0008. Michael Levin is a New York Times best-selling author. He's co-written, edited, or created an astonishing 90 or more books, of which 8 are national bestsellers, including 1 New York Times bestseller. Steven Soderbergh, Paramount, HBO, Disney, and ABC have all optioned 5 of Michael's published works for film or TV. One of his own novels became Model Behavior, an ABC Sunday Night Disney Movie of the Week. Michael is an Amherst College graduate and a Columbia Law School trained attorney. Michael is married, has 4 children, and lives in Orange County. Joining us from Orange County. Hi, Michael. How are you today?
Great, Bill. Thanks for having me back.
Well, thank you for coming back onto the show, because your latest book, From Gutenberg to Google, is a great read. I think it's interesting because in the future, Harvard Business School is going to write a case study on the book business. And in hindsight, it's all going to be so obvious to it. But what I like is that you're writing the history right now. You're writing the case study while you're in the midst of all these tectonic changes going on in the industry. Now, I found that your book read sort of like a eulogy on books and book publishing. You captured and presented the facts well. So we're going to bat it around a little bit. Books, as an entity, have been around for about 500 years now. That's a good long run. And I can't think of anything besides organized religion and perhaps prostitution or any other money-making ventures that have been around as long as book publishing has.
Maybe beer.
Beer might be as well. Beer might come in third on that list. So, in the past 30 years, though, what we've seen is an accelerated evolution of the industry, or what Joseph Schumpeter likes to call creative destruction.
Right.
Now, if you look at your book, you break down, your argument really centers on 3 things: the demise of publishers, the demise of bookstores, and the demise of readers. I'm not going to tackle the demise of readers because that gets into education and government and politics and so forth. But let's focus on the demise of publishing and the publishers and the demise of bookstores. Actually, Michael, isn't this really just a changing value chain for the book publishing industry? I mean, you said in the book, information wants to be free. I think it's actually bimodal. Talk to me about the changing value chain in publishing over the last, say, 5 years compared to the previous 20 that you were involved in it.
Oh, sure. I'll say this at the outset. If you've got prostitutes and beer, what do you need books for? Basically, I think books are dead for the most part, or they're dying. They're on their way out. And I say this as someone who has devoted his life to writing books, so it's kind of a hard thing for me to acknowledge. But when you talk about value chain, what we're really talking about is this. It used to be very simple. Publishers, mainstream New York publishers published books. You went to the bookstore and you bought them, and that was the end of the deal. Now, today, what's happened because of the internet is that publishers have lost the absolute lock that they used to have on marketing and distributing books. It used to be that the only way you could distribute a book was you had to, be published by a New York publisher, get into the bookstore, and that was it. Today, you've got the internet, you've got Smashwords, you've got Amazon Direct, you've got tons of ways to publish your own book without New York ever hearing about you. And then in terms of marketing the book, same thing. It used to be that the only books that ever got mentioned anywhere were the ones published by the major publishers, reviewed in the major newspapers, and that was about it. And today, the major newspapers are going away. They lost their advertising classified ad revenue due to Craigslist.
Sure.
So they've lost the ability to have space for book reviews. So they've lost their ability to get books, word about books, out to the people. The only thing they can do is bribe Barnes & Noble to put the book in the front window or to face the cover out instead of having the spine out on the shelf. That's the last trick in their bag. They're stuck because you, the author who doesn't need New York, can now market your book independently. You can buy Google AdWords. You can find you can blog about it. You can go to your social network community and tell them about it. You can find websites relevant to the topic of your book and just kind of hammer them and get attention. So New York has really lost its way. It's lost its place in the publishing universe. There's really no more need for them. And as a result, books are not just going to devices like iPad or Kindle. They're going away. And that's what Gutenberg to Google is all about.
Wow, there's a flood of information in that answer that you gave me, Michael. But let me focus in on a couple of things, because what you say is true. New York and the six major publishing houses that are in New York are definitely losing their power. But to say that books are dead, that's a little harder to understand or believe. Because in New York, you've got the six major houses that are now all conglomerates. And in the rest of the country, you've got about 300 what I would call mid-sized publishers. We have two of them right here in Ventura County. We've got Gospel Light, and we also have Sage Publications up the road from the studio here. That's about 300 mid-sized publishers throughout the United States. And then there's an astonishing 64,995 small publishers. And this is according to the Book Industry Study Group, BISG. I'm not just making this up. So to say that books are dead, I mean, you've got 65,000, almost 65,000 publishers out there. How can you make the assertion that books are dead?
Oh, Bill, you know, you go back to go back 5 years before automobiles became ubiquitous in society, when you still had horses and carriages, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You had 65,000 manufacturers of buggy whips, okay? And then 10 years later, they were all gone because nobody wanted any more buggy whips, okay? There used to be companies that made straw hats because everybody wore a straw hat all summer long. They're all gone because... So what I'm saying is that we're looking at an environment where publishers still exist and books still exist, but the thing is that they are on their way out, both publishers and books. And I'll explain why. When you move from an environment where you're buying a book in a Barnes & Noble, basically you know that you can browse in the bookstore and you can kind of read a few pages. You cannot tuck that book under your arm and walk out. Now, on the Internet, you do not pay for information by and large. You may It's very rare for somebody to actually pay for information on the Internet. Typically, you get everything for free. So when you move from the concept of a book that was a physical thing in a bookstore that you have to pay for before you can leave the building, to an environment where you are typically getting stuff for free, at some point people are going to say, why am I buying a book online? Why am I buying a book to a Kindle or an iPad, which when the book is 250 pages long, I only need 5 pages worth of information. I don't want to spend all this money on all this other stuff. It's sort of like in the music industry, why am I buying the album when I only want the single?
All right, and that's a good analogy.
So people are only paying 99 cents for a single on iTunes. And at some point, they're going to say, why am I paying $11 for a book when I only want 99 cents worth of information?
Well, that's a very valid point. We're talking to Michael Levin, his book, Gutenberg to Google, The Rise and Fall of Books. And Michael, I'm with you on a lot of the points that you're making, but let's go back to your basic assumption about information. That really goes back to a quote you have in the book, information wants to be free. Those of us who've been around long enough remember that when the Internet first started up, that
right.
was the basic call word that people were saying, information wants to be free. Actually, over time, what's proven to be true is that information on the Internet is bimodal. Yes, there is some that's free, and I will grant you that. But detailed studies, a lot of sophisticated papers, scientific papers and things like that are available on the Internet as well. And those things cost $300, $400, maybe even $1,000. So it's really bimodal. You do have some free stuff that would be general content. But if you want specific numbers, you want specific facts, you're still paying and paying dearly for that on the Internet. Now, I do like what you have to say about people wanting to buy things in bytes. I do believe that that is causing the demise of the bookstores, but not necessarily the cause of the demise of books. But let me get back to your basic thesis. So the books are on their way out. Explain this for me, because I still collect books. I have a library of books, and there's a certain generation of which I'm part of. You look at a person's library, and that's how you judge them. I think books are always going to be around, if nothing else, as a decorative item.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe whalebone corsets were decorative items for a while in the early 20th century. And the reality is that to come back to your earlier point, there are certain things that people pay a lot of money for online, but guess what? The average person who buys a book today in Barnes & Noble would never need a $300 scientific report online. So I'm not talking about scientists or academics who don't even have to pay for that stuff anyway because their university pays for it or their corporation. The average reader is not going to need information online. It's just not going to happen.
Michael Levin sounding the death knell for books.
Yeah.
And it's amazingly a sad story for both of us involved in it. Let's talk about the death knell of bookstores, which is very much more apparent right now with borders shuttering, over 200 stores across the United States, Barnes & Noble on the selling block itself. Amazon is proving to be the 700-pound gorilla when it comes to retailing books. Talk to me about bookstores and what are their places in the world, the modern world.
Yeah, bookstores are dead. As we know them, Borders was run essentially by idiots. They bought huge buildings because they figured they'd sell a lot of music. Hey, guess what? Music went online. They didn't want to get involved with selling books on the internet. They thought that would be too much trouble, so they sold their online business to Amazon. Oh, what a big mistake! A lot of their bookstores were built in bad locations, so they're going away. Barnes and Noble, there's a deal in place that the company that owns QVC. Bought Barnes & Noble. And if I'm QVC, I'm thinking to myself, hey, you know something? I want to be able to sell, you know, $49 jewelry and bathroom towels in retail locations. So if I buy the Barnes & Noble chain, they're not going to have any books to sell 5 years from now anyway. This is a great play. So you're going to basically see doilies and you know, bracelets, for charm bracelets, where you used to see bestsellers when QVC takes over Barnes & Noble.
An interesting prognostication there. Well, talk to me about the business side of bookstores, if you will, Michael, because you point out in your book very rightly that bookstores don't make money selling books anymore. Talk to me about the value chain there.
Bookstores, you know, I mean, here's the thing. A publisher publishes a book and then sends it by truck. A person drives a truck to the bookstore, and the book is stuck there in the bookstore for about 3 weeks. If nobody buys it, they put it on another truck and ship it back at the publisher's expense. So that's a pretty dumb business model for publishers. And from a bookstore's perspective, if people are going to Amazon to buy books, which they are, then what we lose is something called browsing. And that's where you went into a bookstore, you found a book on one topic, and then you wandered over into another section, and you picked up another book from there. And then somewhere, you walked out of there with 7 books. You had a good day. You go to Amazon, you want a book on Mickey Mantle. What do? You buy 1 book on Mickey Mantle. Then they say, hey, here are 4 more books on Mickey Mantle. Even Billy Crystal doesn't want to read 4 more books on Mickey Mantle. So when browsing goes away, what happens is that people, instead of buying 5 or 7 books at a time, only buy 1 on Amazon and none in the bookstore. So, you know, the future of bookstores may be that they're going to go back to being little mom-and-pop outlets the way they used to be a generation ago, and they've got machines that can literally print and bind a book right at that moment. So the bookstore person doesn't have to have a huge stock of books, and you can just say, I'd like such and such a book, and they'll print it up for you on the spot. I think that's going to be the future of book retailing.
Wow, that's an interesting prognostication. Michael Levin, author of the book Gutenberg to Google. Michael, in that answer, I was with you on a lot of points, but I do want to make one clarification when it comes to buying a book on Amazon and the recommendations that they make. Yeah, I think that is perhaps the most brilliant piece of Amazon is their recommendation engine. And if you train the engine enough, it will not only offer you up, in your example, Mickey Mantle books, but it also will offer you other sports books. And it might even offer you business books on the business of sports. So the more you train the engine in Amazon, the better it gets at making suggestions for you, and in fact can replace a good bookseller who knows your tastes and recommends good books for you. So I think that there's some value.
Respectfully, I just don't see it that way, and I'll tell you why. If I do something online, I do it really quickly. Everything I do online, I do it as fast as I possibly can. And everything online is geared to helping you, you know, Amazon, one touch, one click, whatever, to get you in and out, to make the purchase and you're done. When I go to a bookstore, I'll spend half an hour, 40 minutes. I'm going to buy a lot more books in 40 minutes in a bookstore setting than I will online in the 45 seconds it takes me to complete the transaction. If I cannot browse in a book, and I know some of the books I can read the first couple of pages, it's not the same thing as holding it in my hand. It's called the puppy dog close. You put a book in a person's hands, they want to take the book out of the store. You don't get that on Amazon, and that's why people buy fewer books on Amazon, and that's another reason why bookstores are dying.
Ah, great. We're talking to Michael Levin, author of the book Gutenberg to Google, The Rise and Fall of Books. Michael, what do you want readers to take away from reading Gutenberg to Google?
Well, I want people to recognize that, you know, Gutenberg invented movable type and ended one dark age, and now we've got Google and all the information online, and there's a second dark age that's coming because we are allowing ourselves really to become ignorant of what's going on. And as books disappear and as it gets harder and harder for people to get the truth about what's really happening in government or the way the military is used or intelligence, we're going to be much more easy to control as a society. And our kids are not going to have the opportunity to express their own creativity because they're following everybody else's creativity like game designers instead of thinking things through and inventing for themselves. So I'm saying is we have an obligation to keep on reading and to keep on demanding books and to keep on educating ourselves and reading to our kids, especially our small kids, and get them into the lifetime habit of reading, because there will be a small number of people who are out there reading and learning, and those people will control society, and we have to be one of them, and we cannot allow other people to dictate what our lives are going to be like, and that's what's going to happen. It's going to make 1984 it'll look like a party.
Oh, a very, very powerful message from Michael Levin, author of the book Gutenberg to Google, The Rise and Fall of Books. Michael, you probably have stirred some people's juices. They want to learn more about you, learn more about the book. Where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Sure. Bill, people can go to my website, businessghost.com, business and G-H-O-S-T, like Casper the Friendly Ghost.com. And then they can go to Smashwords to find Gutenberg to Google. It's only $2.99. That's a bargain in my book.
It's a bargain in anybody's book. Michael, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Bill, thanks for having me. Always my pleasure to be with you.
Good talking to you.